Franchised is presented by FakeShep.net with support from Emrecell. If you're looking to buy an iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or any other Apple product, visit Emrecell today. They offer refurbished, top-of-the-line, and next-to-new Apple products at a fraction of the regular price. And if you're looking to sell an Apple product, they'll buy them off you too. Visit emrecell.com.au.
In 1989, three legends of horror came together to create an unlikely and unexpected family adventure. One of Disney's most recognized and enduring movies, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The film was a technological masterstroke, which harked back to some of Hollywood's most classic creature features, as well as giving rise to a reliable Hollywood big-budget director. From it, two sequels were born, as well as a popular television series, and a handful of theme park rides and attractions. My name's Glenn, I'm here with Jarrett and Sean, and we're from FakeShemp.net. You're listening to our brand new show, Franchised. So strap yourself in as three dudes experience one hell of a severe case of mutual shrinkage.
Well, I think I have a thrush.
What the f*** is a thrush?
Farewell, dear shithead.
Delirious!
Shit, lady, do I sound like I'm one of the pieces of shit?
Lick my plate, you dog dick!
So before we get stuck into the franchise, I want to welcome Sean back to the microphone.
Hello!
Rested and recovered from a futuristic odyssey in the jungles of Vietnam.
Yeah, it's been, man alive, it's been grim, I'm not going to lie. I got some battle scars. You want to see my battle scars, Jared?
You've looked like you've lost a ton of weight.
I have. They don't feed you when you're in a bamboo cage under the ocean.
Where's the future thing coming to it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I was making up as I went.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back, boys.
Okay, so on this podcast, I'm going to throw this one to you guys. This is a kid zone, so there's no swearing. For every F-bomb or C-banger dropped, the culprit will donate $5 to an un-yet-decided local film crowdfunder.
Yeah, you're right. Wow.
I'm just going to stay silent.
Yeah,
this is going to be the hardest podcast of my life, but I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It does make sense. So, let's talk about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The franchise started in 1989 with the first film. Honey, I Blew Up the Kids came along in 1992. Then Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves in 97. And there was also Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV show in 1993. There were a few theme park attractions. Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie set adventure and journey into imagination with Figment. Don't know what Figment is, but we'll get to that a bit later.
Oh, you just scored your first $5.
I did. Oh, I knew it was going to be me. I tell you what. Anyway, this is going to be...
Score. High five.
This is going to be an expensive podcast, I can tell you.
It seems to be a very durable franchise, doesn't it? Given its sort of moderate beginnings. Correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like it was a particularly massive budget at the time. Like, big budget, but not, like, gargantuan by any stretch.
No, bang for buck, though.
Yeah. But then for it to spin out so many sequels, spin-offs, you know, and all the rest of it, it seems...
Well, that said, gentlemen, it has been, what, 20-odd years since there's been entry in the franchise, but given the track record of this actual podcast, the day after this goes live to stream, there'll be an announcement
have you
that they're rebooting
that?
It.
Really?
We have had the hex put on us. Every single podcast we've done, something has come along to contradict what we've said. So with Rambo, we talked about the sequel's not really happening, and now they've announced that the sequel most likely is. And
the one you discussed.
Yes.
The one that I bagged.
Yeah. The one that you said you didn't want to see. Yeah.
We've seen it.
And what was the other one? That was
Pet Sematary.
Pet Sematary, we talked, we talked about that. And
there'd been no news since October of last year, since they named some directors, and that was all we heard. And then casting news was coming out every week after we recorded it.
Yeah, anyway, so let's talk about the first film, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, as I said, released in 1989, directed by a very young Joe Johnson, who at that time was a whiz kid of the special effects world within Hollywood. The film was also the unlikely creation of some of the movie world's most renowned horror filmmakers. So Brian Usner, Stuart Gordon and Ed Naha, the guys behind Reanimator series, as well as From Beyond, Dolls, Dentist, just to name some. It's amazing to think that these guys are the ones that came up with this.
It's staggering, particularly because kids' films aren't necessarily my bag, right? I mean, you know, cartoons particularly. I don't know what it is. I got a real problem paying money, good money, to see a cartoon. But kids' films, and I know that you're different, Glenn. I know you really enjoy them. So I never really pay much attention to them. So it wasn't until the other day that I was watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and the credits rolled, which was a really bizarre animated sequence, by the way. That animated intro, I don't know how well it sits with me. But when I saw those names pop up, it knocked me sideways. I had no idea.
Really?
I had no idea that Yuzna and his cohorts were all responsible for the script.
Well, they originally wrote it as a screenplay called Teeny Weenies. That was the name of the film they wrote, which is quite interesting. Stuart Gordon was set to direct it, but he got sick, and it's when they called in special effects wizard Joe Johnson to replace him.
So they called in Joe Johnson?
Really? I think because his cinematography probably had a real affinity for effects-driven... Set piece.
Well, because he'd been a models artist back in the day in the late 70s, early 80s on a bunch of George Lucas's stuff. So it made sense for him doing something of this sort of scale.
And correct me if I'm wrong, was Joe Johnson a Spielberg apprentice? He was a Lucas.
Yeah.
Right.
For those that are listening that don't know Joe Johnson, he went on to direct The Rocketeer, The Pagemaster, Jumanji, Jurassic Park 3, Captain America, The First Avenger, just to name some.
And the vastly underrated Not Safe for Work, which came out in 2014, which maybe is one of his last, I think it might be his last film, a Blumhouse film. It was amazing. And we covered it on a previous Fake Ship podcast.
It was really clever.
Very cool film.
So guys, are you fans of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the first film?
I really dig the first film. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's like, it's one of those, like, whenever a Joe Johnson film shows up, right, I always feel like Joe Johnson films want to be like Steven Spielberg films, but whatever it is that Spielberg has, Joe Johnson doesn't. So all the elements are there in this melting pot.
Spielberg's investment is in the character development and dynamic. This one isn't very family-driven more than it is special effects-driven.
Yeah, but even down to things like the score. I thought the score has that kind of buoyant, you know, bubbly, crystalline.
Who actually composed the score for this one? Was it James Horner? It was James Horner, yeah.
But even then, when I was listening to the score, I remember thinking, did James Horner do the score for The Goonies as well? Because the score to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is remarkably similar.
Was The Goonies Alan Silvestri? Actually, no. Dave Grusin.
Yeah, it was somebody completely different. And if you listen to the main themes of The Goonies and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids back to back, remarkably similar.
Mind you, I find the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids score very Disney. Like, it's the kind of thing that recurs around a lot of the Disney live-action films.
It's whimsical, but it also feels like a bit of a throwback to 50s, 60s.
Which I wanted to get at. I think this film, adventure, as I said in the intro, is very much a throwback to the creature features, you know? And the fact that Yuzna and Stuart Gordon and all that were doing this kind of tells me they maybe wrote it with that in mind, that it was going to be almost like what Joe Dante did with Matinee. It was that throwback to that era, and it kind of, when it got taken over and Disney really invested in it probably became something different to what they had pitched.
True. Well, this film feels like it could have been part of that Empire or, you know, Full Moon, you know, kind of. It could have been done on a modest budget, probably looked like shit, but been a lot of fun.
Bum, bum. No. No.
Independent film gets
funded. No. I said F-bomb or C-bomb, so you're safe.
Ooh. Sorry, guys. No, high five. No funding for you.
PG.
Right. Okay.
F-bomb is...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But you're only allowed one per PG film.
Okay, well, there you go. There's your quota.
Well, that's all right, quota, because Big had a little bit of swearing in it, and the chap that was in Pet Sematary 2, which is in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I know. Whoa, what's going on here?
I can't remember his name. He's Josh
Jared, something or other. Anyway, interesting fact about this one, Chevy Chase and John Candy both turned down the lead role. And that's interesting because we've already talked about John Candy turning down the role in Ghostbusters.
Yes, of course.
Which went to Rick Moranis.
Right, and it was that role.
Yes.
Right, wow, incredible.
And so Candy stepped down or declined and Rick Moranis took over.
Rick Moranis picking up everybody's scraps and doing a hell of a job with
it. And how lucky are we that Rick Moranis has come out of retirement before we record this, because otherwise we would have talked about it and then a week later he would have announced it.
Totally.
So that's exciting in itself. Starring alongside Rick Moranis is Matt Frewer, who you might know as Max Headroom, amongst other things, Marcia Strassman, Christy Sutherland, Kimmy Robertson from Twin Peaks, Thomas Wilson Brown, Jared Rushton, that's the guy.
Yes.
Amy O'Neill and Robert Oliveri, who has dropped off the face of the planet because I tried to track him down to do a guest spot on this episode and he has disappeared entirely.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Retired, so whatever.
Left the business.
Yes. So, incredible set design. It took over 9 months for them to build this.
Yeah, and I mean, everything's so handcrafted, like from the matte backdrops to the incredibly large Cheerio props and things like that.
It's incredible. They used a combination of miniatures, super-sized set pieces, props, stop motion, forced perspective. I love forced perspective.
Yeah, great.
Really, really well executed in this one. I said that it was originally called Teeny Weenies. Other working titles for the film were Grounded and The Big Backyard. None of them have stick. Like, none of them really, really resonate. I think Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is a really clever kind of title.
And it throws it back to, like, The Incredible Shrinking Man or, you know, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. It's one of those kind of bold titles.
Have you picked the spot of bother with the title? There's a bone of contention with it.
Shrank, not shrunk.
And the Society for the Preservation of the English Language and Grammar awarded the film the Dunce Award for using the term shrunk instead of shrank in the title.
Real. That's hilarious. Yeah.
So it's an award-winning film.
Get a hobby.
Yeah, that's, well, they have one, clearly.
I know. Jesus Christ. Unbelievable. What do you think of the film? I mean, like, you sound like you're a massive advocate for it.
You know this
it.
Is
like
up my alley. Yeah, I mean, I like chose this, it for that reason.
These kind of, these kids' films, but where does this rank amongst, you know, your favorites in that realm?
I don't think it immediately ranks like, you know, top 20 or 50. Yeah,
Back to the Future.
It's, it's not that level of film, but it's definitely a film that I just immediately think to as just a wonderful film. Like, I'll have no hesitation watching it if it's on TV. I'll just, I'll stop right there and I'll watch it right to the end. I think it's wonderful. I remember seeing it at the cinemas. Did you guys see this when you were that age?
Yeah, I saw both of them. Yeah, my dad took me to
see. Yeah,
so this is the drive-in with my sister when it came out.
Of course. How many films originated at the drive-in for you?
Oh, God. Many. This was a walk-in. This is one we actually walked into the drive-in, and, you know, and set up a blanket and watched. When I would have been, what, was this 88?
Yeah,
89?
89, yeah.
So it was, yeah, like 9. Yeah.
Well, yeah, so
we watched Gremlins 2 and Back to the Future 3, I think, around that time, all at the drive-in.
Yeah, so this film is kind of interconnected with that sort of that nostalgic thing I had in the 80s, but this was sort of at the back burner of it at a point in time where I was old enough to recognise that it is a kid's film and I was into other things. But it's wonderful. I love practical effects, and this is just overabundance of practical effects.
Now, what about Auntie? When Auntie, you know, kicks the bucket.
Yeah.
Did they get a little...
No, I didn't.
You didn't find it a little bit... Like, no. Even watching it again, like, the other night, it still gets me that bit, which is really odd, because, like, I feel more safe for that character than the stakes of any of the human characters in the film. I'm like,
really?
Oh, no.
Because I think...
it crosses me a little.
I think as a kid, though, I was more just in awe of it than to have an emotional connection like that. My emotional connection was excitement.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I love Rick Moranis. Like, he was that goofy, little, dweeby-looking scientist guy. He's an interesting connection that the film very, very loosely sort of has with the fakeshemp.net brand, and it's the Pune connection. Do you know this one?
No, I'm interested.
So one of the co-creators, Ed Naha, wrote two of Albert's films, Omega Doom and Doll Man.
Oh, wow. No, Doll Man.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
There's a franchise we can cover.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know. No, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's sort of when I didn't even know that until I sort of read up on this, and I'm like, yes. Right. We've got something else we can tie to the Pune.
Yeah.
That is the one sequence in this film when Auntie and the Scorpion go at it, where I sat watching thinking, this is the film that Yuzna wanted to make. Like, this kind of pandemonium is, it's got his name all over it. Like, I'd be very surprised if it wasn't anybody other than him that had anything to do with that sequence.
I actually read too that the one of the original drafts of the script, one of the children was to die.
Yes, I read that too.
So it's been pretty dark.
Apparently that concept made it a fair way into the pre-production before they scrapped it.
Wow.
Disney don't like to kill kids.
No, generally not. No, just the elderly and animals.
But this came at the back of, like, you know, Disney had gone really dark for a while.
Yeah.
Both with animation, with, like, the Black Cauldron and things like that, but also films like Something Wicked This Way Comes and Watcher in the Woods. So it was on the back of Disney going through that dark era. I would like to have seen one of them killed, because you know that I love to watch kids get killed in films.
I mentioned
that recently on the last podcast. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the second one. Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. I guess the natural counterbalance to shrinking kids is to blow them up, but like not in a Rambo kind of way, more like a balloon kind of blow up. And it was released in 1992, 3 years after the first film. It was directed by Hollywood stalwart Randall Kleiser.
I know, it's so bizarre.
Whose other films, of course, are Grease.
Summer Lovers.
The Blue Lagoon, Flight of the Navigator, White Fang, and as I said, Grease. Big Top Pee-wee.
Of course, the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I love White Fang.
Yeah, White Fang's amazing.
Oh, I remember going to see that in the movie.
That is a Disney film. I was going to say that was a Disney one. Has a really morbid scene with a corpse falling out of a coffin.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That
was very grim.
Mortifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is a great film. So, anyway, I want to talk about this one. What do you guys think? It was originally written as a standalone film. What was the title of that one?
Big Baby.
Big Baby, that's right. So, thoughts on number two?
Well, I got a little tiny side story. I did see this one when I played in cinemas. I went to a preview screening of it, but there was a similar thing to what they have here in Melbourne, where they have like an annual parade through the city and there's lots of floats with people dressed up as different things and whatnot. Well, my mum's friend was working for Greater Union at the time, so I was dressed up as Rick Moranis, and they had like, you know, this grown woman dressed up as a baby. And yeah, it was a grown woman, not a boy. And then another little girl my age dressed up as a little girl, and we went through the city on this back of the float. Actually, on the same float, because at the same time this was coming out, the original Sister Act was coming out. And so they had women dressed in, like, you know, nuns' outfits with the habits, and they were smoking cigarettes. I don't think you could probably do that on a float through the city anymore. But so there's like a really weird sort of connection I have to the film.
Please,
but
tell me there's video of that.
There's a photo. Oh, there's a photo. I'll dig it up.
Yeah, I've got to see
there's
this.
There's a photo. yeah, so I went to a preview screening as a kid, and I think obviously I was 12. I enjoyed it, not quite as much as the original, you know, having seen it back then, but I don't know, for me, whether it's held up.
It's a very different feel, but I think it fits in the franchise quite well, to be honest with you. You can kind of tell it's a standalone story. It's very much a Godzilla kind of, you know, concept.
It should be more Godzilla. I feel like the finale of the film should be the whole film. Like, it should be the baby wreaking havoc on the city, and that would be a really cool film. Yeah. And they save it for the finale, and it's sort of like more of this, less of just the sight gags and things. And it feels like it's a very single, you know, joke-driven type of film.
Yeah,
and it doesn't have the adventure angle of the first film. The first film feels more of an adventure, as this one's kind of like a...
It's a disaster film.
Yeah, well, partial disaster and bit of slapstick comedy, you know?
Yeah, I guess the whole the goal of the narrative is completely shifted. In fact, it goes the complete opposite way, you know, where they used oversized props for that one. They used miniatures in this one. Mm. And heaps of miniatures, I should say, and
more force perspective.
Way,
that chase so sequence much. Around the living room.
That chase sequence on the living room was unreal.
It was. It reminded me of that movie, The Garbage Pail Kids.
Where you had totally.
Yeah,
yeah. I am so disappointed that didn't become a franchise, because I would love to talk about Garbage Pail Kids.
Totally.
So the cast, most of the original cast returned. You had Rick Moranis, Marcia Strassman, Robert Oliveri, and Amy O'Neill. They all returned, joined by Lloyd Bridges and a young Kerry Russell.
Yes, so young.
As well as a bunch of other God.
Is it her debut feature?
Must be.
Yeah, she was like 16, 17. And that first sequence, I remember I was watching it again because I haven't seen it in a number of years. I was watching it. And that first sequence where she comes out of the pool in her swimming costume, and I'm just like, is this kosher? So then I went in and I looked at it. I was like, no, she was 16. I'm like, there is no way you'd have that in a G-rated film. You wouldn't have that in any rated film.
Four words: my father, the hero.
Oh yeah,
that sequence with Catherine Heigl walking out of the pool.
Yeah, I'm like, it just wouldn't happen.
Well, not a Disney film. I think it was a Touchstone film.
Touchstone. It's a strange film because
is this Honey I Blew Up?
Honey I Blew Up the Kid? Yeah, my father. No, Honey I Blew Up the Kid. It's a strange film because thematically it fits the canon. But aesthetically, it's just a remarkably different film. They've obviously got a little bit more budget. The rubbery kind of sets from the first film that made it so endearing, that much more of a throwback, they're missing now in lieu of practical stages and all that.
It was a soundstage film.
It feels different, but you know, the special effects feel a little bit more refined because this would have been around the same time as Jurassic Park was coming out. There was a big CGI revolution. I don't think this film capitalized on it as well as, say, Jurassic Park. And then, like you say, like, it's just this bizarre structured story where you feel like all the good stuff just kind of crammed in the last 20 minutes.
I also, when I saw this at the cinema, I found the title really confusing. Like, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Totally.
It's a strange title. They're trying to obviously fit it with the franchise, but Honey, I Blew Up the Kid sounds to me like you've...
Well,
exactly.
I was going to say, I used to call the first one Honey, I the Kids, and the second one Honey, I Blew the Baby. Now, that wasn't swearing, and I'm trying to keep it PG. But the other thing, too, is This film, in my head, up until watching it again the other night, I actually thought it was titled Honey, I Blew Up the Baby. And I'm like, hang on, was it called that at the movies? I'm looking, I'm like, no, but then I found somewhere at some point it was called that. And I'm like, I could have sworn it was called Honey, I Blew Up the Baby, not Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
It sounds like a violent title.
It does actually, yeah. You couldn't do that title these days.
I actually think the thing that saves... Because I don't think it's a particularly good film, right? I don't think... Things like when the sister shows up, she's just there for the name check, just the title.
Absolutely.
She's getting zero reason to be in
this
film.
She was not in the original script at all, so they just had no purpose for her.
They crowbarred her in, yeah. And I think the only thing, outside of Rick Moranis, who's got a charm that I could watch Rick Moranis read a phone book for days. Like, I think he's very engaging. I think he's very easygoing. He's a very nice screen presence. I think the thing that saves Honey, I Blew Up the Kid is the kid.
Yeah.
Like, I think they lucked out with the kid. Like,
kid's so cute.
Yeah, he's really cute. But all his little, you know, throwaway lines when he repeats what everybody else says, you know, but he gets it wrong, you know, all those kind of little tiny charming bits. I think if you take those were the bits that made me snigger the most, that got me through the film. I think if you took out or if you miscast that kid, I think Honey, I Blew Up the Kid would be in a lot of trouble.
I was going to say that scene, the interplay between Rick Moranis and the baby when he's trying to feed the baby and he's pretending, you know, you want to go to the restaurant? Okay, well, you know, and it's just such a great scene.
Yeah. Or he dresses the kid up with a hat and takes him back into the laboratory and everything. Like,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, the kid saves this film time and time again. And I repeat, if the kid was miscast or they just got it wrong, this film would have been in trouble.
I will also counter that with Quark. He is also phenomenal.
Yeah.
Played by Sammy. He's credited on the second film, and it is the same dog from the first.
Is it really?
So 3 years later, he came back and reprised his role. Good. Bless him.
Up his contract.
Yeah, totally. Those legs couldn't get any larger, but his ego.
Well, interestingly, speaking of contract, Rick Moranis has said that he would not come out of retirement until he found like the perfect thing, something that he would do that's different to what he's done before. Right. So maybe we could pitch him reading a phone book. I think that might do it.
I would you know, if we could get Andy Warhol out from the grave to direct it, and maybe just 45 hours of Rick Moranis reading a phone book, that's a film I'd tune into.
If you're looking for a new Mac product, MResell is the place for you. Don't throw your money away on stupidly expensive Apple gear when MResell provides top-of-the-line, totally refurbished products across the Apple range. Whether you need a new iPhone, iMac, Mac Pro, iPad, or other Apple products, visit MResell. And if you're looking to sell your Apple gear for whatever reason, MResell can offer a generous price with full data erasure, fast payment, and free shipping. Visit MResell's website to see for yourself. FakeShemp.net uses their products, and they wouldn't steer you wrong. Visit MResell.com.au.
So that brings us to the third installment, Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves, a very weird installment, I might say, released in 1997. It was the final installment in the movie series, with the Disney theme park attraction taking place in between this one and the second film. This is undoubtedly a budget sequel. Moranis is the only original cast member that returns, and the special effects are practically entirely green screen.
Yeah, and badly done.
Yeah, really badly. You only watched this one for the first time recently,
first time I've seen it, yeah.
I was the same. And first time. Yeah, like 72-minute running time. Glenn, God damn you. This was, I mean... agonizing this was.
That was a willing donation. That,
yeah, that was a. I'm happy to take it. This was, oh god, this was tough, man. This was a tough watch, even at 72 minutes.
Well, I think you're being a little hard.
Really? What do you think about it, mate?
Look, it's yeah, it was a pretty hard going exercise. I got 61 minutes into it, knew that there was only 11 minutes to go, and I drifted off. And then I woke up during the end credits, and I was like, I'll go back, and I went back to where I was up to, and then I was like...
Just to clarify, that was 11 minutes off the finish credits. Like,
could I watch the rest of the movie?
But
I reckon I could probably get by without seeing it, and I whipped to the end just to see what the final shot was.
Dude, there is such a Jarrett... like angle with this one, because it was directed by Dean Gundy.
No, that's the weirdest.
Gundy, sorry.
Yeah, Dean Gundy directed it. The cinematographer from countless Carpenter films, The Thing, Halloween, all these classics.
Escape from New York. He did Jurassic Park, but Apollo 13, Jack and Jill.
I think Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves speaks classic for ourselves, because it was Rick Moranis' last film, Dean Gundy's only film he's ever directed, and Alison Mack, who stars in this film, Well, she went on to become a recruiter in a sex cult. So, yeah, I think that speaks volumes of Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
This, I don't know this story, and this sounds infinitely more entertaining.
You have not heard this Alison Mack story?
No.
Oh, yeah, right. Wow. Well, she, you know that she went on to have a pretty prominent role in the TV series Smallville as Chloe.
Yes.
Right, well, anyway, so that, I think that was the leverage for her to get enough notoriety to be able to recruit young women into this sort of bizarre sex trafficking cult.
She was arrested about a month ago.
Yeah, she's been arrested for it.
She's out on bail, and she's...
It was all denial, and then they've proceeded with arresting her, but they've dug up tweets from her as well, where she's tried to recruit... what's her name?
Oh, prominent actresses.
From Harry Potter.
Emma Watson.
She tried to recruit her via Twitter. Like, I've got this beautiful women's organization that's really empowering to women, and I'd love for you to become a part and support
it. It's under the guise of a motivational kind of seminar kind of deal, but it's actually a sex cult where her and the leader of the sex cult brand their initials into their victims. Or
And then they traffic the young girls to wealthy families or wealthy Hollywood types so they can basically, have sexual relations with young girls.
Jesus. In other words, very wholesome content for a Disney-themed podcast.
I know. There was, with her being in this film, there was no way that this was ever going to be family-themed.
I'm not going to lie.
Swearing is off-limits, but the sex cults are good.
Not going to lie. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I saw every single joke in Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves coming, but I did not see this story coming.
I know, it's such a foreshadowing. You watch her in this and you're like, oh my God.
All right, can we rein it back in?
Okay, let's go.
The movie was originally slated for a theatrical release, but this was at the time when Michael Eisner took over Disney and started making a shit ton of money.
We've already had our one.
No, that was one each. You've got one still too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Save it.
Do you want to get it out or save it?
No, I'm going to save it.
He's already dropped the F-bomb. Anyway, so Michael Eisner took over Disney and he started pumping out all these direct-to-video sequels to the animated films, and this was their trial run on live action to try and, see if it works. Clearly it didn't.
Did it?
It didn't.
I think, it didn't do too bad, though. I think
See many others.
Well, I know, you're right. There was no other sequels after this.
It seems like such a shame that for somebody like Rick Moranis, who's got so many beloved roles in so many films, that this... should be the thing that
curtain call.
Yeah, this is up until fairly recently. This was what we were left with. This was like Raul Julia stepping off on Street Fighter. Like he deserved more.
Yeah,
Rick Moranis deserved more than this.
Well, but it was on his own volition.
I know
he didn't die.
No, I know, but it's still it's if you're gonna bow out with any film, this would have been.
He probably watched it and thought, I'm done.
Yeah, side note, does anyone notice how hairy Rick Moranis is in this movie? When he lifts his shirt and he compares bellies with the other man because they've got the glowing thing inside them that's supposed to be for, roadside workers or whatever. And then you just look and you're like, oh my God, you're a hairy little man. And then the obese chap, his brother in the film, is like, just there's no hair on him. It just made him look super hairy. He looked like he was about to turn into a werewolf. And I thought, this is a film I want to watch.
The least likely brothers in cinema history other than, perhaps twins.
And there's a really weird scene where he has to explain to his brother how he was uncool in high school and was bullied all the way through. And then the only reason he met his wife was because he ran his car into her or something. And I was like, hang on, wouldn't your brother know all this? And he's kind of got this smirk and shaking his head like maybe he's heard this 1,000 times before or maybe it's just brand new information. And I was like, what is this here for? This is bizarre exposition. We don't even need this. We've got a good idea of what Rick Moranis' character is because we've seen two films prior to this one.
And did you notice the product placement?
So much product placement. It was ridiculous. They've got Slurpees. They've got Tostitos. It was like every single shot was filled with branding.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
Apparently the initial budget was somewhere I think it was less than $2 million production budget.
Really?
Yeah, because the film was originally budgeted at $40 million when it was going to be a theatrical film. But when they scaled it back because it was going to be a DTV production.
We can do this green screen.
And subsequently that's why it looks the way it does. And that's why it was shot the way it was, shot in 1:33:1, finished apparently on three Apple Mac computers in Dean Cundey's house and then polished by some digital effects mob. But it was all the effects are finished in standard def, so there's no way you're going to obviously see some Blu-ray. But yeah, in order, the product placement basically was how they got the budget up to 7 mil.
Yeah, right.
So
the budget for this was 7 mil.
7 mil, but I can understand it was, because if you think back, this is 1997. There is a lot of digital effects that would have cost a fortune.
Okay, so all of the, you know, for all of its shortcomings, what do you guys make of the story itself? Do you think it's a worthy addition to the franchise?
No, it just feels like a shameful cash in. Like story wise, I don't think the story was good enough to
begin with. It's a rehash of the first one.
Yeah, it's total rehash, and in the worst way possible. Like, you don't have a good adventure. They're trapped inside the house, and there's just, it's pretty boring.
So Disney comes to you and says, we want to do a third film in the series. What would your concept be?
Oh god. Yeah, I mean, haven't actually thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves is the natural, you know, progression of the series. Mm. I just think that the framework through which they tell it isn't particularly good.
Did it have to be their house like the first one? Could it have been exactly. somewhere
needed
else?
To be somewhere
have been
like, else.
Maybe at that bloody complex he works at, you know, where they have all the machinery.
Was like,
and
your crazy gadgets.
Yeah,
yeah.
Somewhere industrial could have been cool.
Like, yeah.
Well, that's another question too. Well, they're back in the suburbs again. They were in Las Vegas in the last one.
Well, because
so.
that service the standalone film that they
Lloyd Bridges seemed to have big plans for his future. That didn't sort of work out well, because now he's working with his brother at a shitty tech company that no one cares about. Oops. There goes some money for the independent film. Hopefully it's a reboot of Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
Yeah.
Not even, skip the first two and just remake this one.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think it's I agree with you. I think it's a pretty shameful cash in. Mm. It's transparent and it's boring, and and like I say, for a 70-minute run, I felt like I was watching this for a fortnight.
I was excited that it was 72 minutes. I was like, man, these films get shorter as they go.
There you go. It could have been Honey, I Slowed Down Time.
Yeah.
That would have been a cool film.
Yeah.
That would have been a cool film. I'd watch that.
Maybe.
Well, provided it wasn't
directed
by Dean Cundey.
I'm going to run this past Disney before we go to air. All right, let's just draw a line in the sand there and move on to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV series. Did either of you guys watch this when it was on?
I did not even know it existed. Really? Rewatching these films.
I agree.
Do you know what this one felt like? Did you ever see Harry and the Hendersons, the TV series?
Yes, I did.
It was like that. I thought the quality of the show was better than the third film. Like, it was a really, really clever show. It ran for 66 episodes over three seasons.
Really?
From 97 through to 2000.
Holy.
Yeah, it was created immediately after the second film.
Right.
I'm pretty sure. It starred Paul Scolari, who was also in Camp Nowhere, Polar Express, Sorority Boys, and a heap of other TV shows.
Love Sorority Boys.
Yeah, so he played the main character. Barbara Allen Woods, who was in The Terror Within 2.
Oh, wow.
Ghoulies 4 and Striptease. And then Thomas Decker, who was in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, Chrome Skull, My Sister's Keeper, and a whole lot of other stuff. So I thought it was a really decent family-friendly, kid-style TV series. Very similar, like I said, to Harry and Henderson's.
Mm. I'm guessing that's never had like a physical release on
DVD.
Not
that I know of. I think you guys would probably, or Jarrett would particularly get a kick out of this. But, you know, Mr. I Hate Kids Films over here probably wouldn't get a kick out of it as much. But, you know, for what it was fun. There's not a lot of TV shows with that kind of high concept going around. It ignored the chronology of the series and went for a sort of a redo. We'll just start the first story again and just continue from there.
Did it have so there was no one from the movies, obviously, so it was just completely
no
fresh.
There was one actor that reappeared, but he was no one knows who he is, and he's just sort of, I think he went through the casting call twice and no one picked up on the fact he'd already been in a background somewhere else. And it just ended up on like IMDb trivia.
I should qualify, I do like kids films.
Well, you've mentioned several times that you don't.
He doesn't like animated movies. He's
I like The Rocketeer. That's a George Johnson film that I like.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's a family film. That's
appropriate.
It's family appropriate, but it feels like a precursor to like a Marvel sort of
Goonies?
Series of films.
Yeah, I'll pay that.
Yeah.
But it's a classic. It's got more appeal than
yeah,
that.
It's a broader.
You're not getting away with this one.
Okay.
What about the theme park attraction? Now, Glenn.
Okay. All
right. Have you ever been to the?
I have. They've, you know, in Disney, in the Disneyland, Disney World complexes, they change and retrofit the attraction. So I'm pretty sure I've been on one that before or after, probably after it was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Honey, I Shrunk the Audience was one of those 4D adventures that was actually that replaced Captain EO.
Right.
At Epcot.
Yep. I've been on both.
I've been to EO, but I haven't done the Honey,
I did. It's no longer. 2010, it was all done with. But I went 2002 and 2009.
That was directed by Randall Kleiser.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he came back for that one. And Dean Cundey served as the director of photography.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So he'd already been in the franchise before he did his film. So
incredible.
Maybe that's why they hired him.
Yeah,
and that's clearly why he never worked again as a director.
Makes sense.
So it also featured Eric Idle. He was in that as, I don't know, I guess a scientist or something. Yeah. You're the one that's
Eric Idle was a scientist?
Makes sense. You know. He's played a nun before.
Yeah, I trust
he could do a scientist.
Yes. And then there was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie set experience. Was essentially just one of those sort of like, I think they do Toontown and things like that, where you the kids can just, it's a playground that's just giant stuff that you can play with. It's not really worth talking on the podcast. So.
No.
And then there was Journey into Imagination with Figment, which was what they call the dark ride attraction at Disney World, which is an elaborate ghost train. So it was hosted by Eric Idle and remodeled. It was a remodeled incarnation of a ride that had been there since the 80s. And it just essentially gave the riders an illusion with experiences with holograms and lasers to make them feel like they've been shrunk.
Right, okay.
So a ghost train that makes you feel shrunk. Shrunk. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So there's nothing more to add. I think that brings us to the end of the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids series. I like the series. I think it's worthy of a discussion.
Yeah, I love the first film. I think it's a classic. I think the sequels, almost in that Pet Sematary 2 territory. You watch the first, you're drawn to watching the second. And I think I will never watch the third ever again.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same. I mean...
You're not going to watch the second one again.
He's not going to watch any of them.
I probably won't watch... Like, I have no gripe against them if they were ever on, but, like, I don't think I would ever go and... I think there's better examples of the genre.
If news comes through, and I hope this is not a trend with the podcast, but if news comes through that Joe Johnson passes away, is this one you'll revisit?
No.
Oh, you heartless bastard.
Well, at least it's not the last film that Joe Johnson directed, I'm guessing you're thinking. Yeah?
Thank God. Mm. Yeah. I think, yeah.
Well, now that Rick Moranis is out of retirement, we might get a fourth film.
Yeah.
Imagine that. If that's the first film we came back for.
It's going to be that or Ghostbusters 2.
Or Reading the Phone Book.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that one.
I think we're done. All right, that's the end of the show. Let's cut it. Let's cut out Ties with Thank you, Jarrett.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you next time.